come from last night, but I need more. Fuck. She is so young. Fuck. I didn't consider what she might want to do in this new world I've given her. Didn't consider how she might want to experiment. The image of my stunning wife and my pretty little dear touching each other forces a growl through me as I pick up pace, fueled by possessiveness. I thought there wasn't a fucker alive who I would have to share her with. The arrogant man in me overlooked that my sweet girl might want to experience other sexual practices, like most young women do with each other. The vivid image spurs me on to the point of frenzy, feeling violently territorial, as I know I'll give her the world. Every experience she desires, every sweet thing, every pleasure. I despise my love for her because it means I'll say yes. Yes to anything and everything that'll make her smile. The primal sensation consuming me drives me wild, and she is so fragile beneath me, soft and smooth, and I'm fucking her now with every inch of power in my hips. My pelvis grinds on hers, she releases throaty moans, and I withdraw fast. My hard drives throw her up, her shoulders hitting my forearms with each deep, hard fuck. This is what I can give her that no one else will, and I'll remind her every day of that fact. There is something else I can give her too. A reason to stack pillows, to bake cakes, and to wake up in the morning. To be mine forever. My cock throbs, enveloped in her clinging little pussy as she wrings the goddamn sensations up from my balls. I slide my hand to her lower abdomen, pressing down, applying weight until she is overwhelmed by the pressure. She cries out,
"Sir, yes, please."
And I eat her words. Quaking around my cock, her orgasm thrashes within her, forcing her to tense and release sweet, choppy yelps. My balls immediately tighten, my abdomen bunching to her sweet, whimpering cadence, and I spill into her with a shuddering growl. Demanding I stay deep, while I feel her, I feel the sensations of warmth, tightness, and closeness as she ripples around me, sharing my climax. I rest in her hair, animalistic, and feeling too much. I'll need to get her vitamins tomorrow. Chapter 9. Clay. I leave her to sleep. Heading downstairs, intent on running off a few rounds in the shooting range, I'm stopped by the side of Aurora, reading in the lounge room. In the corner of the room, a pen houses the small cat. The animal a white ball on a pillow. Set up to be the utmost spoiled creature alive, I am certain. It's the early hours of the morning now. Staring at my wife, it becomes evident something weighs on her as she escapes into an alternate narrative. Yet I know better than to press her for details while she attempts to wipe her mind of them. The lamp over her right shoulder casts a glow across the olive skin on her face and the white pages on her lap, the only illumination of the room. "Were you reading to my little dear when I came in earlier?" I ask, striding to stand before her. Unfazed, she finishes her paragraph, her eyes sliding across the page one last time before she pulls a ribbon down and closes the book on it. A sly wisp of a smile slips across her lips.
"Yes, she likes the classics."
"She likes you," I state, fighting to remain nonchalant, stifling the hiss of disapproval that threatens to twist my outward manner. I don't entirely disapprove of Fawn's affections, watching my sweet girl grow, coming to know what she enjoys and doesn't as she explores her sexuality and accepts her beauty, is my greatest pleasure. I exhale hard, disliking the territorial growl that circles the warning sound. As always, my wife sees straight through me, saying,
"She has a singular taste in companions, wouldn't you agree?"
"My little dear is awed by strength."
"Yet is so very unaccepting of her own."
I laugh, impressed and agitated. "Part of me, as always, is fascinated by your attention to detail." Clapping my hands in front of me, I add, but I'm not sure I appreciate so much of your attention on her. She rolls her eyes.
She's yours.
Yes, but she's not entirely contented right now. Sighing roughly, I admit through a tight jaw. And for the first time in my entire life, Aurora, I have no fucking idea how to fix this damn problem. What do I do with a teenage girl? A dark whiskey-colored eye softened knowingly.
You can't expect a young girl to not be the reflection of how she is treated. So, treat her.
I thought I was. What do you suggest?
Give her the world, Clay.
She stands and sashays to place the book back on the shelf, using the few seconds to hum in contemplation.
Don't keep her locked away from it.
Unacceptable. I won't choose anything over her safety, not even her happiness, I declare, as I track Aurora's movement across the room. Dustin is only a few miles away, Aurora. It isn't safe.
You found him.
She whips around to look at me, her dark brows pitched as she processes this recent development. I nod. I believe so. In the biker compound. I'm almost certain of it. He'll be coming for her and the baby he believes to still be in her womb. I don't know what he's planning. She shakes her head slowly.
But it will be a massacre. My father would have had his men and your brothers break into that compound at night and take them all out. He'd call in the force if he...
Jimmy didn't care about casualties. I do. And we won't be putting Xander at risk.
No. Or her.
It wasn't a question. It was a statement of agreement. Aurora doesn't want our family anywhere near this. She doesn't want Fawn anywhere near this. It seems my little dear is bewitching everyone. That makes a smile slide across my lips for a moment before it falls. This may get out of control, Aurora. They may come for you, or the girls. They may create chaos on the streets. There is no saying what they will do given the chance. I cannot have my family in the city while this is being executed.
I can tell by your tone you already have a plan. Have you contacted Luca?
I have a meeting with him tomorrow morning. I'll be working from home, I state, my eyes landing on the kitten, a corner smile fighting its way out when those dual-colored eyes peer up at me. But we will leave, I say, returning my attention to Aurora. We must be seen outside the city. I may have a clean image, but Max does not. None of us can be here when the fight breaks out, or we will be caught up in it. I won't let another one of my brothers lose years again. My regret clogs my throat. Max lost years. And the women need to be safe so my brothers can act ruthless and meticulous. My thoughts are to spend time in Dubai and then leave the women and Xander under hotel arrest. Max, Bronson, and I fly back to the district, and we will take the compound at night with only a few men. We will try to keep it quiet and professional. If we succeed, that will be the end of it forever, and the city will barely blink an eye.
Xander will be furious if you leave him out of this, if you trick him into leaving the district.
My young brother will do as he's instructed. Far be it. I would rather suffer his hate than grieve his death. I gaze at the woman I respect more than most. A person so entwined with my own self, with the construct of who I am today, that I barely know which of my ideals and mannerisms were mine first, and which were hers. So, of course, I know when I add, I want you away and safe too. She will rebut.
Absolutely not.
She scolds, and I grin at her for her predictability.
I won't allow you to execute this by yourself. If any of you don't return, you will need backup. I need to be here to send men into the compound to get you out.
She is right, of course, but I still don't like it. If they capture us, they may come here searching for you. I challenge, shaking my head. No. I need you out of the city. I won't put you in danger like that.
I was in danger the moment I was born.
She bristles.
It never bothered my father, so don't let it bother you.
But it does bother me. Squaring her shoulders, she presents unwavering severity in every inch of her posed stance.
You can't expect a woman to not be the reflection of how you treat her.
She repeats, and I frown. Damn woman.
You have always treated me as an equal. Don't go archaic on me now, Clay.
Panning my eyes over her flawless features, I see the resolve. She is right. Keeping her from this will only fill her with the same disdain she harbored for her father. A man who forced her to accept this life but never gave her a voice. I won't do that. I gave her my word decades ago that I would never pull rank on her. As you wish. You may stay in the city. Be here to make arrangements should we not return.
You will return, but I'll be ready if you don't.
The flare of strength crosses her eyes.
I'll bring every man, woman, and child in until we find you.
You sound like a boss. I smile at her, liking how well she wears intimidation, how comfortably it simmers just beneath her flawless skin. And if things get messy, I need you to control the press. How is your relationship with Lorna? Can we count on her to mediate information to the district news? She smiles. Unbidden evidence my bratty ex-lover still invokes endearment in my wife.
We still enjoy one another often. I believe we can count on her.
Excellent.
Chapter 10. Fawn. The smell of coffee rouses me. I wake to Clay sitting across from me on the sofa in the corner of our room, wrapped in his suited armor, a cigar between his lips, a newspaper going unnoticed in his lap, his eyes on me. I smile sweetly at him, happily a little daring due to the ache his lovemaking yesterday caused. It reminds me that I'm not just his, but a bit of him is mine too, something I missed these last few weeks. You're a creep, I taunt.
I'm not sure I can argue with that, sweet girl.
He states, the intensity of his emotional state last evening seemingly a distant condition, replaced by that smooth, controlled detachment Clay Butcher is known for. I don't mind. I caught his sentimental butterfly. I'll keep it safe, sir. He inhales the cigar, his eyes unwavering from me, the ember at the tip flaring brightly. I sit up and slide off the bed, wincing and shifting as I feel the memory of him between my thighs. Then I remember my kitten and beam. Can I go play with my kitten, sir? Instantly, he slides the paper to the side and taps his thigh.
After I have played with yours, lay your sweet body over my lap.
He says, talking around the cigar.
I'll help you with the swelling.
A hot flush spreads across my face as I notice the glass of ice sitting beside him, so I quickly do as I'm told. Sweet memories of the last time he took me hard and then soothed me after, guiding me quickly to him. Grinning demurely, I say, "Can I at least shower first this time, sir?"
No, you may not. You can shower after I've had my coffee, read the paper, and enjoyed you.
I crawl over his lap, settle my head and elbows on the pillow already positioned beside his thigh. Twisting to face him, I ask, "You're going to read the paper while I lay on your lap?" A cube of ice lands on my spine, and I shudder as it trails down before settling at the well of my arch.
Yes.
He says smoothly, using his finger to slide the cube over the hump of my ass and down the crease of my backside so he can use it to circle my lips. My pussy is puffy and tight, gradually thawing the cube in its heat. He continues his treatment of my aching core, and I bask in the lush sensation of his authoritarian touch. He treats every slide of his fingers like his duty of care. It is everything. A simmering tingle, a caress that promises ecstasy but never actually builds enough to deliver the brunt of it. It's perfectly teasing without discomfort. I'm the spoilt one, Aurora. So very spoilt. The smell of his coffee and his cigar circles the room while his hand is reverent in its caring attention. I feel like butter and melting chocolate, all warm and swirly and gooey. You're not at work, I stupidly say.
You're very observant.
If you want me to be more remarkable first thing in the morning, then you should probably allow me more than a few hours between... His hand connects with my arse in a hard slap. A gasp leaves me before it twists into a long moan, the shock turning that delicious sizzle of pleasure into a buck of sensation. His big palm rubs the stinging flesh as he says,
I think you have forgotten, sweet girl, that you will let me fuck any of your pretty parts I desire, whenever I desire. Now, what were you going to say?
My cheeks heat, probably glowing the same bright red as my backside, a matching stamp of arousal. Nothing, sir.
Good girl.
He pushes two cold fingers inside me, easing the swelling, flooding me with pleasure so lovely it curls my toes.
I like watching your toes curl.
He scoops both long digits inside me, applying the thick pads to the back wall, stimulating me to flex my ass and groan.
Yes, I'm taking the day off. We can have a long weekend. Have you ever been on an aeroplane?
Barely focusing on his words, the sensation consuming my conscious mind, I try to reach for what he said. Plane? Like in the sky? God, my brain is useless when he's doing that with his fingers. No?
Don't answer a question with a question.
No, sir. I've never... I start to convulse with waves of arousal when he dips his thumb between the muscles rimming my rosette, while his cool fingers continue their reverent strokes on my puffy lips. I take fistfuls of the pillow beneath my head and turn my face away from the sight of him with his cigar still smoking from his mouth and his heated eyes glued on my backside. Burying my whimpers within the soft material, I writhe on him.
Your pretty holes love being full. Did you know that? They suck me in with such demand, such need. How am I supposed to separate my body from yours when every part of you is so very sweet to me? Hold still for me, little dear.
Replacing his thumb now is a cool, hard object that pulls my muscles taut.
Good girl.
I flex around it and he groans.
I can only imagine what it feels like to be held in this tight hole. Relax. You remember my present. This is to stretch you, but it's also to help train your muscles so you don't flex too hard when I try to get inside you.
I pant to the hot sensation of being full, so exquisitely stretched. Flexing around it decisively, I moan from deep in my throat. I flex again. He guides me to a sitting position beside him on the sofa, my hands in my lap and my backside on my heels. The plug moves when I do. Clay pulls the cigar from his mouth, the tiny remnants of it almost burning his lips. Reaching over my lap, he butts it out in the crystal tray on the table before leaning back casually. Giving me his full attention now, his eyes roam my face, and he sighs, a smile sliding across his lips. And I'm butter. I fucking melt further into a puddle of his making.
This one is smaller than the last one. Not because I'm being generous, but because I want you to wear it most of the day. Can you do that for me, sweet girl?
Excitedly, I agree. Yes, sir. He reaches to the table, retrieving a container of wine-coloured pills and a glass of what looks like orange juice, offering them both to me.
Take these every morning.
Is it candy? I shuffle my backside in the dip between my heels, closing my eyes for a moment to the sweet agony of the plug moving. I open them and catch his like a direct threat of something primal. I agree to it. I'm here willing and eager for whatever you want. I don't need candy, sir. He clenches his jaw.
Mind your mouth, sweet girl. You may like it now, but I won't always be so gentle with your spanking. Behave so I don't feel the need or desire to show you what pain, pleasure and discomfort can do when they peak at the same time.
Fucking hell. Excitement, anticipation and fear shock my heart into a frantic tattoo, widening my eyes. Should I start to piss him off now or later? His easy blue gaze cuts to the container in my hand, then back to my face.
The pills are vitamins, sweet girl. Let me see you take one now.
Okay, later. I grin at him, a cheeky slant to my lips. Yes, sir. I slip a pill through my smile, chasing it with a sip of juice. My taste buds buzz around bursts of citrus as I swallow.
Now.
He leans back and drapes his thick arms over the back of the sofa, looking powerful even in that casual position.
I'm inside you right now, in your little ass. Remember that, because I won't be able to play with you today. You'll see me around the house, but I need to.
So what? You want me to just pretend?
Don't interrupt me. Yes. I want you to keep yourself busy. Leave me to work. You are a distraction. Be my good girl and look after your kitten. Do some online shopping. Get a suitcase. We will be going on a trip in a few days.
A trip? Like what kind of trip?
The kind I will explain when I have all the details.
He shuffles to the edge of the sofa, nodding to the spot between his spread thighs.
Stand and let me get a good look at you before I go.
Tiny amounts of warmth creep up my neck as I stand and turn to face away from him, hit with the caress of his gaze on my backside and the little item inside me. Large palms trail the outer swell of my thighs, awakening the tiny blonde hairs on my skin to rise.
Simply stunning.
One of his hands slides forward and cups my pussy, and my head drops backward on a moan. I press into his palm. His lips touch my backside, dragging along the plump curve, nipping and sucking the skin. I rock into his palm as he enjoys the taste of my flesh, all but eating me with small nibbles that shock my nerves and the drag of his tongue that curls my toes. Then his mouth is gone, and he rises. His suited body slides up my back, his hands touching me everywhere as they climb with him. They end at my neck, gripping the column, forcing me to crane my throat to accept his lips as he towers above me. He nips me before breaking off from my mouth.
Now you may shower, sweet girl. Chapter 11. Clay. Q, my first garden assistant, ever the gentleman in his suit, with his regal manner, enters my office moments after I sit down. Even though I ran two magazines out in my range before coming here, I'm still tense about what must happen next. The finality of the week ahead, hunting down Dustin, breaking our treaty with the bikers, leaving the women in another country. It coils my muscles to cool, unwavering steel. A cup of coffee is set down in front of me while I open the building plans my brother Max sent through from the city's database. Thank you, Q. Your father is here, boss. He pours the steaming liquid, and I nod, abruptly thinking about how Fawn shouldn't have any if I want her healthy. Fawn will need decaf from now on, I state, staring across the polished wood office table at him. Don't allow her to drink anything caffeinated. He nods politely, no intrigue or interest ghosting his eyes. Good man. I shall get some for Miss Harlow this morning. Where is she now? I ask, although I am one click away from seeing her for myself. I dare say that once I allow myself that sweet view, she becomes somewhat of a perpetual distraction. In the lounge area with Bolton and her new cat. He advises and leaves me to my business. I find myself grinning at the vision of her sitting cross-legged and playing with the small animal. A soft smile on her face, shuffling around with the reminder of me stretching her little asshole. My cock pulses. I relish being her constant thought, being inside her always. My present in her. My cum still deep and perhaps the building of something else as well. I stare back at the building plans Max easily accessed at City Architect. And while I don't entirely understand all the information, he does, and I'm confident he will be able to chart a course in and out of the biker's complex. I study the halls and spaces. It's a vast compound with dozens of rooms. Dustin could be hiding in any part. If only we had a man on the inside. I sigh, eyeing the documentation. But we don't. Our man on the inside was born and bred district local Dustin Narek. Fucker. Never mind. Do you have a whiskey for your old man? Butch enters with my mother, surprising me with her presence. She looks slim, far leaner than the last time I saw her. Almost sickly. I stand to greet them, firmly shake my father's hand, and lightly kiss my mother on both cheeks. Hit with a wave of perfume from her neck, I'm instantly reminded how much I enjoy Fawn's natural scent. Well, now that you're here, it would be ill-mannered for me to not also have one with you. My father sits, taking up the full breadth of the chair with his thick, muscular physique, while my mother disappears into her one. She crosses her legs, her spine ramrod straight. She's tense. So, he's in the stockyard compound. Butch muses, usually the quietest man in any room if not one-on-one, living by the golden rule that words spoken should hold meaning or not be spoken at all. That isn't good. I never suspected that. I should have. He shakes his head. I should have, but their lifestyle didn't suit his own, and so I was misguided. Can we get any alliances on the inside? What about the president? Cross. Surely he doesn't need a war with the family. He doesn't like Sicilians, son. He is a swastika tattoo away from a Nazi. I prepare us two whiskies and sit back down opposite my father. Leaning back in my wingback chair, I rub my jawline and hum. True. I raise my glass, saying, cheers. I take a generous mouthful before setting the glass down. When my mother swallows hard as though she may vomit, I measure her up. She is oddly quiet, holding her stomach in a protective way. Are you well, mother? She smiles stiffly, even for her.
Very.
I shift my gaze between my father's even stare and her hooded one, sensing a significant issue in their relations. Body language screaming they are amid an argument, not something I have time for. I note her tired eyes, dots of blood speckling the whites. Are you hungover? Do we need some kind of rehab for you? My father folds his arms across his chest. Your mother has always been a drinker, Clay. You have far more important things to take care of than my mother.
I am sitting right here. And I do not have a drinking problem compared to the men who have started their whiskies at 7 a.m. Thank you very much.
Butch barely reacts as she climbs to her feet and flattens her dress down her thighs before wandering from my office with a slow sway.
Excuse me.
Frowning at her mannerisms, I watch her leave. I don't like that. Pressing my intercom, I speak to it. Q, get my mother some water and take her outside for fresh air. Finished with that disruption, I return my attention to my father. My police informant, Marius, sent over a list of known patch members and prospects that we may find living in the compound. Only 10 or so actually reside there on a regular basis, it seems. Readying myself to deliver a regretful truth, I sip my whiskey. He sips his. I chase the burn with the facts. You will not be needed. In fact, I would prefer if you were not actively a part of these kinds of operations. Blue eyes stare blankly at me. I go on. You may be stronger than most men, but you are not swifter and not stealthier. Unimpressed, he says. Never missed a meeting. A meeting. A hit. Such words are synonymous with large-scale execution in the Cosa Nostra. My father has been by the Don's side for half his life, offered his greatest years and his sons to the family agenda. Now, though, he has earned leave. I stare at the man who had little to do with raising me, but with whom I share blood and unparalleled respect. I know you haven't. I acknowledge smoothly. This has nothing to do with his capabilities. That's the way Jimmy ran things. With you both at meetings. A presence. Intimidation. I don't need you on the front line anymore. Moving forward, my face is the only one they need see. And you're valuable to me in other ways. He grips his glass, his eyes cast down, losing focus within the pool of brown liquid. I've undermined him. I know. But this is the way it must be. I won't put him in danger in his 60s. I'm a liability, is what you mean, son, he firmly states. In this case, yes, I admit, with due esteem holding my tone. You barely fit in that damn chair, and you're going to sneak around a compound at night, climb through windows? I think not. The plan is this. We fly to Dubai in a few days. That will give me time to organize safe passage and reinforcements while we are there. I'll leave the women and children there. Bronson, Max, and I fly back. We require only the minimum number of men on this. 4 others, perhaps. We get in and out of the compound undetected. We finish it, and we fly back to Dubai to get the women. Do I have your support in this? I ask. Wanting the last word on major operations that rely entirely on his sons to be spoken by him. He assesses me. And you bring Dustin out with you? Yes. We retrieve him from wherever he is hiding and bring him back alive, if we can, to the gym, where we finish this once and for all. Setting his whiskey down, he leans back. You have my support. But let me give you some advice, son. You should not run the Cosa Nostra alone. You will drown if you do it all. Who will you rely on? Am I not relying on you as we speak? You are seeking counsel, see? But you need more men. You need loyal men. He points to the wall, waving his finger, a Sicilian mannerism deeply ingrained. Out there. I understand. I intend to make these alliances at the matches I've organized. The Irish, the family, the entire district underground will be there. He nods his approval, blue eyes fixed on mine. Allow me to run those events for you, son. He pauses, and the silence thickens with a kind of sentiment my father rarely shows me. Over the last few years, he has changed, admittedly. He is dedicated to his family now, to my brothers, his grandchildren. I consider myself outside of those properties. But his eyes fixed on mine soften and my chest tightens. I don't have time for this. My muscles coil, wanting to leave the room under this new energy. I clasp my hands. I need to manage these events. Clay, he starts, his tone a foreign empathetic timbre, a somber drawl so entirely unfamiliar, I'm thrown as to who is addressing me. I know I wasn't there for you. What the hell is this? He continues. I know I didn't raise you. I won't tell you how to do this job because you were born to do it. You are the faultless product of Jimmy. I mean that in the most reverent way, son. But you can't do this alone. A leader is by default alone. I force my body to still, while all I want is to move, flick the discomfort from my fingertips. He cares. I care that he cares. That's not what I'm trying to do here. Oh, yes, you are. You are more comfortable alone. He laughs with derision, directing the contemptuous tone inward to himself. We are all particularly good at being impartial. I enforced such a way of life, too. I don't deny it. I know. I struggle, see, with my anger. Like Max, it's often better to beat it out. Beat it into a boxing bag or put behind walls. Butcher men all have walls, but you. His eyes lock on me, and I clench my jaw around the uncomfortable discussion. You're a fucking island, Clay. You don't even need the walls. A truth that pains me some. I talk through my teeth. Anything else? He sighs at my deflection, at my behavior that feeds directly into what he just shared. Yes, he deflates but continues. Jimmy delegated brilliantly. You were the link to the city. He was the don of the family. Dustin ran the locals. I ran the family. Your brothers kept the order. I think you need to remove yourself from your official standing in the city. Allow Max to be the man on the inside. Choose someone else to run the locals. Irritation flares at my temples. I lean forward, press my elbows to the desk and say, you want me to resign from a position I have worked the last decade to attain? Yes, he states adamantly, and I sink back into my chair, shocked by this new development. What the fuck is going on here? That is exactly what I want you to do, he states. I want you to position a mayor of your choosing and be the don of this family. It is a full-time job as it is. Absolutely not. I shake my head. I can do both. Can you do all three? Oh, can you do more? I don't want you to be like me, son. Absent. Too busy. You'll miss it, son. The time just disappears. I ask what I already know. Miss what? Living. Watching her become a mother. He states, and my chest tightens unpleasantly. Watching your sons become men. It just happens. He folds his arms across his broad chest, his white suit shirt stretching around each large bicep. Do you want children with that girl? Damn him. How did we get here? You were taking advice from an old man. Damn him. It's a truth that comes to me without invite. A phantom need that was coasting through my every action of late. The answer to his question. Yes, I want her pregnant, with my sons. Want her round at the hips, growing my heirs. Blood of the Cosa Nostra raised by a woman who is royalty and modest, but humble. Sweet, even. A sweet girl. Leveling him, feigning nonchalance, I say. Perhaps. Flat blue eyes filled with accusation train on me, their inflection growing like barbed wire beneath my skin. you will not lie on your deathbed and regret raising your sons, Clay. And deathbeds find us young in this game. You will, however, regret not raising them. He slowly nods. I speak from experience. Too much. Damn him. Rising to my feet, stifling the impulse to lunge over the desk and fist his collar, growl at him for unloading his regret and bullshit on me when I need to focus, I simply smooth my tie down my shirt in lieu of that urge. All excellent advice, I say, widening my arms for him, a gesture to indicate the discussion has ended. He stands, unreadable again but for the pinched brows etched to his forehead, residual of his unreciprocated sentimentality. Very well. Your mother needs to stay in one of the guest rooms for a while. I have pissed her off. She might knife me if she stays in the house with me. See? Can't possibly understand why. I smile easily, and where I would usually decline, I don't, as I'm itching to remove myself from this sentimental energy. Of course. I will have Q make up a room in the other wing. She'll have the entire extension to herself.
Chapter 12. Fawn.
You smell so sweet, little dear.
He says through a growl that radiates through my bones.
And I'm starving.
Those words reach into my dreamless state and draw me from its cloak of darkness. I moan in half coherence as the blanket slides down my body. Air rushes over my core as Clay presses my thighs apart with his palms.
Open for me.
The mattress brushes my outer legs when I drop my thighs apart, exposed completely. The air cools the wetness now gathering between my thighs. His voice. That is all I need to be completely ready for him, primed. He wanted to condition me to be ready for him, and I am.
Pretty.
I missed him. He was busy all day and gone all night. I missed his voice. His large presence that holds me, envelops me, soothes me. That dreamily coats me in his scent, cigars and gunpowder. Power. Clay Butcher is what power smells like. My eyes stay closed. My senses are fine-tuned to his movement and warmth. Reaching down, I find the strands of his dark hair hovering above my waist. He dips down and runs his tongue over my clit in one long, slow lap. I missed you today, I whisper to the ceiling, writhing to the quiet sensation he offers me.
I know, sweet girl. I had business to organize, and now I want to spoil this pretty pussy.
He groans, burying his head into my blonde pubic hair, inhaling me, deep and primal, forcing a flush to creep along every inch of my skin.
But I also want to fuck it sore, fuck it swollen, just like I want to do to your ass one day, and you will allow me, offer your pretty holes to me. You belong to me.
God. Firm, authoritarian lips bracket my pussy. I lift off the sheets on a spasm, arch my back. He doesn't focus on one spot between my legs like he has done in the past. He is passionately kissing me. He is making out with my pussy, deeply, sucking my lips into his mouth, spearing his tongue in deep, mouthing me. Not at all trying to edge me in a direction, not at all controlled or measured, just dirty, carnal, strange, amazing. I let him taste me, all of me, his tongue venturing down lower until he's fluttering the tip over my asshole. Then he's back to kissing me, and my head swims in the sensation of waking up to this attention. A loud moan falls from my lips as I arch again. He pulls on my labia, running his tongue inside. A deep hum, a hum ending in a growl of need, vibrates against my wet, pulsing flesh.
Mine. You calm something in me.
He flattens his tongue and uses it to apply pressure to my clit. A zap of sensation spreads from the bundle of nerves up and down, up and down. The buzzing following the now meaningful strokes of his strong tongue.
I want to hear you say it.
I'm yours. He licks hard.
Your pussy is mine.
Yes. I shuffle my backside on the mattress, my hips seeking, needing, desperate, but he pins me down. He slides his tongue upwards, dragging it between my hip bones, leaving my pussy beckoning in his neglect.
This body.
He peppers kisses along my lower belly.
Is mine to use, to feel. Say it.
My body is yours, sir, to do anything you want with. He dips down again, licking once.
To use.
Yes. Twice.
Phil.
Yes.
Don't move then, sweet girl. I want your little pink clit vibrating on my tongue.
His thumbs slide to either side of my lips. He presses down, parting, and his warm breath beats down on my now exposed, swollen clit. Within a second, he is using the pointed tip of his tongue to stimulate the buzzing bundle of nerves in hard, purposeful flicks. Oh, God! Please, please, sir.
Let me have it all, sweet girl.
He demands, dipping his kiss lower, moving his thumb to press down on my clit so he can lap the wetness from me as I start to shake, convulse. A thunderstrong sensation shocks through my core, to my soul. My thighs tighten, my stomach muscles bunch. I release a long, uncontrolled moan as I give in to the waves and come apart for him. Sir! I breathe his name like it is air, life, reason, everything. Clay hums and sucks me until my muscles slow their intense contractions. My pussy stops pulsing, and all my wetness is licked from my folds in a way that suggests he wants to savor the taste of me, to not waste any. Rising over me as I roll my head from left to right on the pillow, he presses the thick, warm crown of his cock against my opening.
Now to fuck it sore and fuck it swollen. Now to fill you.
Chapter 13. Fawn. Your luggage is here. Jasmine peeks around the corner of the French doors to my position on the new outdoor lounge suite by the poolside. I'll take them to your room. Want me to pack for you, Fawn? I gaze over my shoulder at her, dropping my line of sight to her hand, hoping she has the new luggage for me to see. She doesn't, and I don't want to leave my kitten or order her to grab them, so I say, "No, I can do it." "Righto," she says in her English accent, forcing a little chuckle from me. I never had any acquaintances who weren't Australian born and raised. She disappears, and I look back at my kitten. It's been 3 days since Clay brought her home, and, well, tonight, I've been instructed to meet Clay at the airstrip, meaning I won't see her until we get back from wherever he's taking me. I need quality kitten time. She rolls around, her white fluff shedding all over the dark grey cushions, her needle-like claws plucking the occasional seam out of place. Kittens are so full of life, the epitome of playful chaos, at odds with so much of what Clay Butcher, the devil's prototype, embodies. She meows and meows. Squeaky sounds. She likes her own voice. Smiling, I see similarities too. There are two things that my kitten and Clay have in common: vocalization and honesty. I like cats because they're always honest. If they don't like you, you'll know it. If they want space, they demand it. And if they want attention, they'll take it. The confident little creature stares up at me, tilting her head, her ears flicking around. Cats also consider everything in their path as though it belongs to them, just like the kitten is doing with me right now. Like Clay always does. The mild breeze touches my legs, my white shirt dress ruffling around my waist, and I'm warm on the inside as well. Sweeping my long, white blonde hair over my shoulder and twirling the ends around my finger, I smile at a memory. The vision of when I first saw this elevated area, overlooking the crystal blue waters of the pool and canals, I thought to myself that if I ever lived in a place like this, I would sit here every morning and enjoy the view, take time to appreciate it, and I would get a cat. I shuffle. Stretching me, the plug he placed inside me this morning forces aware, my mind perpetually drifting to Clay Butcher. He ensures control, consuming me even in his absence, and between my thighs, the ache of his passion remains too. "You must be Fawn," a woman says from over my shoulder, and I glance behind me to see Clay's mum in a pink matching sweater suit and jacket, gold jewellery dangling from her thin wrists. The woman who created the most impressive man I have ever met. Kudos. She's in the jam of the French doors, her blue eyes assessing, her pursed smile not entirely unfriendly, but not pleased either. Unreadable. Like it's a fucking butcher trait. "Hello," I say softly, hearing my voice smaller than usual as the matriarch of Clay's family moves around to stand in front of me. I try not to think about what Luca said, about his infidelity, about loving another woman. "Yes, that's me." I internally roll my eyes at myself. "Clever girl, Fawn." "It's nice to officially meet you, Mrs. Butcher." I go to stand, but she raises her hand. "Please, don't get up on my account. You look far too comfortable." "Okie dokie." I lean back. And yet something about the way she said "too" feels as though it stifled further articulation, like, "You look far too comfortable in my son's house." Maybe I'm reaching. She considers me for a moment, somehow stripping me bare. Under her gaze, the thought and sensation of the crystal plug force blood to my cheeks. "Fuck. Don't shuffle, Fawn." I'm becoming increasingly uncomfortable. "Thank you very much." "So, you're visiting..." "You're very striking, Fawn," she cuts in, "with those eyes." She looks down at the kitten. Her lips pinch and then twitch. Then she returns her gaze to me. "And you're the daughter of Dustin. Not just anyone, are you?" "Yes, I'm his daughter." "And yes, I'm staying in the far wing. You shan't see me. And don't worry, I cannot hear anything over this side of the building. So you and my son have absolute privacy to engage in whatever it is that makes him happy. You do make him happy, don't you?" I have no words, my mouth flapping in shock. She knows about me. About us. She did see him fondling me in the kitchen the only other time we met. God, what must she think of me? Maybe Clay's marriage is a known ruse within his family. Yet with that knowledge, she has managed to say nothing offensive, yet somehow delivered discomfort to my very marrow.
I hope so.
Gah! Smooth. She smiles, but it's flat.
That's very good, Fawn.
My breathing picks up pace. It is as though she just awarded me a gold star for giving her son orgasms. This is getting awkward. Glancing at the kitten, I use her distracting little meows to contemplate what to say. I want to ask Clay's mum to sit with me so I can understand her better. Maybe learn about Clay as a child. Maybe laugh at a story or two. Pull out the baby book. All the silly, sweet things I've seen mums do on the television. Only on the television. Because mums in real life don't always do those things. The media gives people unrealistic expectations. I'd like a mum too, though. I'd like a relationship with her. Maybe I can pull her stone-like facade down. Maybe she'll let me call her mum one day. Maybe she's just guarded because the life she's lived has been cruel. Maybe mine too. I can relate to that. Hopefulness fills my chest. Would you like to... I halt my tongue on her retreating back. She's already walking away from me, passing through the French doors and closing them on her shadow. Done with me. Cool, I mutter to the breeze. Next time then. Chapter 14. Fawn. The wind shifts through my hair, the long blonde strands interrupting the view of the flat horizon only divided by a long black tarmac. Ahead, dusk gathers, rushing lines of silver down the pearly metallic paint on the luxurious private jet. I'm awed. I'm also fucking nervous. My stomach churns to the sound of the jet ahead, but I block it out. Slipping into an automotive state, I stride towards the private jet. Henchman Jeeves rolls my new pastel pink Louis Vuitton luggage behind him. I know that's a thing, Louis Vuitton. When I saw them in the flesh on my bed, I raced over and couldn't stop swiping my thumb across the small grooves, creating a perfect LV in the cream handles. Ahead of me, two young women in power suits wait by the stairs as I cross the runway. I take bigger steps towards the open craft, knowing within the rich interior is Clay Butcher. Between my legs, I've been throbbing and wet all day. This is my third day wearing the plug. He puts it in me each morning and removes it when he gets home. It keeps my mind beneath a blanket of perpetual arousal. Today, I removed it, only a few hours ago. Fumbling around, I didn't like taking it out myself, but I came on his sheets as I did. I focus on the craft. After the awkward encounter with Clay's mum, I used his laptop. He'd set up a guest account for me. I know he has some kind of child lock on it, although I haven't faced any restrictions yet. I don't think I mind. He believes he's protecting me. Whether I need it or not, the premise is new, foreign, and makes my heart soar because someone cares enough to do so. I know that to many people this kind of behaviour raises flags, bright red flags. But to a girl who spent her entire life without her seatbelt buckled, without a phone call to see what time she'd be home, without a meal for 3 days, without a second thought, it's like finally being seen. The Beginner's Guide to Flying. And although he told me that it was far from necessary or relevant in this case, little dear, given we are taking a private jet, I memorized the main points anyway. Some still matter. 1. Arrive early. That one doesn't matter. 2. Wear easily removable shoes. What shoes aren't easily removable? 3. Wear comfortable clothes. I gazed down at the white lace poplin dress Aurora bought and hung in my dressing room, the seam lightly